Time to get our weekly national view. He actually got to sit home and watch games like a civilian this past weekend. Find all he does for USA Today online, usatoday.com. This week's podcast with Dan Wolkin, chock full of great information. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, a good Wednesday to you, sir. How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
All right. So I see you made the discovery. Usually on a Saturday, you're on press row. You get to talk with coaches and players, but it's very focused. So last weekend, relaxing at home with the college football world as your oyster, I think when you were talking with Dan, you talked about kind of finding your rhythm. So did you make the adjustment and become one with your remote?
Not really, but I can see how it could happen. And I got to figure out the picture-in-picture thing. So that would really help. But the other thing is we have, personal devices like iPads and phones that you can also use. And what I don't like is how the streaming is 30 or 40 seconds behind sometimes real life. So, I'm not really ready for that yet. But because I sit and, when I watch games now, I have Twitter rolling through my laptop. And so it's like I don't want to be that far behind.
I see what you mean. Yeah, the delay is annoying because you send out a tweet you think is witty and clever and going to be a game changer, and you realize you missed two plays.
that's a problem.
So on the podcast, you and Dan talked about Alabama and how they really haven't been challenged in their SEC games, and he was at the Tides romp against Texas A&M. You made an interesting point, if I'm hearing correctly. It's like they kind of separated themselves, and it might be, in a way, detracting from the intensity of some of these games?
Well, I think so. I think there's two things at work here. One, I think over the last two or three years, they had kind of come back to the pack in the SEC a little bit. And in part, they were also trying to catch up with the revolution in college football, which obviously Oregon fans were pretty well aware of. The kind of stuff Chip Kelly did had swept the Southeastern Conference, too. It didn't come from the West Coast or Oregon. So it was the Gus Malzahns of the world and people like that who brought the hurry-up spread. And they struggled with that. And so Nick Saban began a bit of a defensive, mostly, makeover that took a couple of 3 years of recruiting different body types and that kind of stuff. And we kind of find, and so during that time frame, the gap between them and the rest of the SEC West was much tighter. Now it feels like they've sort of fully developed this new version of Alabama's defense to sort of, it's not like you're ever going to stop a really good offense with a good quarterback that runs this newfangled stuff.
Right.
But they're better equipped to deal with it than when they had this sort of defense that looked like it was going to try to stop a conventional pro-style attack, and then all of a sudden nobody was running it. So they're better equipped to do that, and they've got these big-time, talented players doing it. That's the first thing. The second thing is their offense has, evolved, and now they're running the same kind of stuff, and they've got a guy who is not elite as a dual threat yet, but has a chance to be if his passing improves. He's certainly really good as a runner, and he's got great poise as a true freshman. All of that, it's like they finally developed and now there's a gap again. And that was Dan's point. But I'll say one thing, too. I do think, and this is sacrilege to speak down south, and I was speaking to someone from another SEC school today who said he thinks the league is down around Alabama, and I agree with that, too. So I think part of the reason the gap is back is because Alabama's gotten better. I think the other part is that the league is down around them.
Yeah, you're safer saying that to me than if you were on in Birmingham.
That's right. But listen, there's 30 or 40 SEC fans in Eugene, and I know this because I used to get emails and letters and things like that from them when I was at the Register Guard, and they don't want to hear that anywhere, and that's fine. The truth may be somewhere in the middle, but there is definitely no other elite team in the SEC. The closest thing is Texas A&M, and I don't think any of us looks at them and says, that looks like a playoff team to me. And that's, regardless of whether they could get past Alabama to get into the playoff, I don't mean that. I just mean when you look around at the other teams around the country, it's like A&M doesn't look like those teams to me.
No, I agree.
And that's the next best team in the SEC. In their best years, they weren't necessarily top to bottom great league, but they had more than one elite team.
We're talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. Speaking of rivals of Alabama, Auburn's been kind of ordinary since they played for the national title two seasons ago. They lost a tight one to Clemson, then to A&M. But they've won the rest. Last week, 56-3 over Arkansas. 540 yards rushing. You wrote about it. Bit of a change. I know you've known Gus Malzahn for a long, long time. What's been different and clicked on that side of the ball the last month?
Well, they've gotten better play at quarterback, which if you remember, starting the beginning of last year, they made a horrible miscalculation thinking Jeremy Johnson was going to be a star, and they couldn't handle it, and they had horrible quarterback play last year. And they didn't really know who the quarterback was at the start of this year, which is a bad thing. But Sean White has settled in and is doing a good job, and their offensive line has developed into what maybe one of the better offensive lines they've had. And they don't have a stud tailback, but they've got several guys who can run with the football. And so, you know, they're able to get that push. And when you do that, it opens up everything else. Here's the other thing, too. Their defense is really good. And I don't know if a whole lot of people saw that coming, but it's really good. And you could see that in game one when they played a really ugly offensive game but almost beat Clemson. You know, they were right, firing into the end zone near the end of the game to try to beat Clemson, in the season opener. And at that point, you can go, that's a pretty good defense, and I think that's what they've got. So, you know, we'll see. I did find another interesting nugget that somebody handed me yesterday. They're in the last 16 years, only four times has an SEC team rushed for 500 or more yards against an SEC opponent, in other words, in conference play.
Gotcha.
Three of those times were since Gus Malzahn has been associated with Auburn.
Wow.
Either as offensive coordinator or now back again as head coach. Kind of interesting.
It is. For folks who aren't familiar with Auburn, that kid, Trey Williams, one of their linebackers, yeesh, he's a terror. Let's get to the Big 12. That check your defense at the door game, Oklahoma and Texas Tech.
Oh, man.
They both had 854 yards. Pat Mahomes threw 88 times, tied the college record for yards in a game. So based on what you wrote, the Sooner defensive coordinator, Mike Stoops, actually sounded like a guy who lost. What did he have to say about – I mean, what do you say after giving up those kind of numbers?
Well, you say what he said, unless you're going to deny things. So I mean, I actually kind of appreciate the fact that he said it was humiliating. I'm embarrassed. I don't know, you know, it was the worst thing ever, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I appreciate that he said that. Now, you got to get them fixed. It doesn't mitigate the fact that it happened.
Right.
But at least he admitted reality. A lot of times after these types of games, we've all been involved in these deals where coaches will come out and they're just, you know, flat out not acknowledging reality. There's been a little bit of that in your neck of the woods at certain times through it. And so it's nice when a guy actually acknowledges, wow, that was a tremendously bad performance and we've got to get this fixed or we're in big trouble. And that's essentially what he said. I'll say this, that's not only a bad sign for Oklahoma, because look, no, Texas Tech's defense is terrible. That's like a given. But that's not only a bad sign for Oklahoma, that is really bad for a damaged already perception of the Big 12. And I'll tell you why. Remember back in 2012 when West Virginia beat Baylor 70-63 and everybody just laughed and laughed?
Yep.
Okay, recall at that point, Baylor was not what Baylor has sort of become, which is sort of a almost elite, sometimes elite type of team, right?
Yep.
Baylor wasn't that yet. They were just sort of up and coming. West Virginia was brand new to the league. And so while that was like chuckle, chuckle, horrified chuckle, it was like, yeah, but that's not the real Big 12. That's just those guys on the small fry end of it. Now it's just happened to one of the two bell cows of the league. Texas and Oklahoma are those. And Oklahoma has been involved in one of those crazy track meets that should never happen. To me, that is a different kind of thing for the Big 12 when it happens to somebody that should never happen to. And so to me, that furthers the perception that the Big 12 football is, you know, something inferior and substandard, the idea that they never play any defense.
Wasn't that the game where we gave Geno Smith the Heisman in September or early October?
Well, it was one of those games. I mean, he had a great September, right?
Yeah, so, I remember that.
And remember last year, Mr. October Heisman was Leonard Fournette.
Right.
And then the first weekend in November, he got 31 yards against Alabama, and like 13 of them came in two carries in the fourth quarter. And then he was no longer Mr. Heisman.
He didn't win the Heisman after all. Well, with Geno Smith, he didn't even wind up in the top 10 that year.
That's right.
Talking college football with George Schroeder. On your Twitter feed today, you shared this database of what college coaches make. Jim Harbaugh, $9 million. It was actually 20 years ago Bobby Bowden became the first to earn $1 million. Now 72 do. You mentioned it. It's kind of interesting. Have we reached a point where when you give a coach that kind of money, you got to consider not only the price tag for hiring, but in case you have to fire him as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the thing, too. Coach is the ones with the leverage now. And so a lot of people have in their contracts, you know, pretty big buyout clauses. Or it's a guaranteed deal. You get a five-year deal. If you get fired after the third year, you're getting, you know, 2 years of salary, you know, or whatever. Now, I mean, so you've got to consider, that's exactly right. Like when LSU bought out Les Miles, they're paying just shy of $10 million this year.
Wow.
And if when Charlie Strong gets fired, and I think that's going to happen, that's why I said when, he's going to end up with about $10 million because he's going to get paid for the final 2 years of his deal. It is a five-year deal at about $5 million, you know, per. And so it is a consideration. And, in fact, Les Miles would have been due something approaching $15 million had they been able to complete what they were trying to do last November and fire him. So they actually saved some money, although you could argue they set the program back. If you're convinced you need to fire a guy and you wait, you may set the program back more. So it's kind of a complicated calculus. What's the right thing to do in a situation like that?
I know what the right thing to do is. Get me one of those deals. You can happily fire me. I'll walk out of here $10 million. Let these guys talk about sports all day.
Well, hey, listen, you're going to have to pay the next batch of coaches very soon. And by the way, it's not just the head coach. The head coach may be making five, but the assistants are probably another, you know, you're probably paying another, at big boy schools, another $2 million for the assistant coaches total, you know, total.
Yep.
And, you know, some places a little more than that. So, and some of them are under, you know, guaranteed contract that's a couple of years long. And you're going to have to pay those things off. And then you're going to have to pay at least the same amount, you know, basically to the new staff and the new head coach. He's not typically going to be making less than the guy you just fired. Sometimes he would be, I guess. So it's an expensive proposition.
Wow, it's amazing. I want to look ahead, couple final thoughts. You always give us your five games to watch, and before we saw Clemson-Louisville, many had Clemson and Florida State. This game circled as a battle of top fives.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Noles got crushed by Louisville, lost a tight one to North Carolina. Clemson's actually been less than overwhelming. So this game might not have that marquee value we thought a couple weeks ago, but there's still an awful lot on the line here.
Well, Clemson is firmly in the playoff race, and their defense is really, really good. Their offense has only put it together maybe in the second half against Louisville, frankly, which was obviously an important time to do it, to beat them. But they really haven't put it all together. I think they're going to. I don't think it's one of those situations where we're going to find out later that for whatever reason they were, you know, less than the sum of their parts offensively. But this would be a real good time for them to do it because while this isn't the same Florida State team defensively, they've had a couple of tough injuries as they were to start the year. And while this Florida State team clearly isn't as good as a lot of us thought they might be, it's in Tallahassee. It's a night game. It's still a tough place to try to go win. And, you know, you don't want to be in that position where you've just taken a loss because now all of a sudden you start getting compared to other teams and you have no margin. You have to win out and this, that. You know, you kind of get into the Ohio State situation.
Right.
So I think it's still a great game to watch. It's not the one I'm going to. I'm going to go see your favorite and everyone in Eugene's favorite Washington Huskies. I know people are now throwing things at the radio. I get it. I was just having a little fun. But
Sack
I'm going to see them
City.
Play Utah.
Yeah.
And I actually think this could be a real potential stumbling block for them. If they say, look at it this way, if they sail through Utah, you're looking at a serious contender, not just to get in the playoff, but to do some damage, because I think Utah's pretty good. But this is the kind of game they could go lose.
Yeah, I think, probably most people nationally don't realize if Utah could have scored one shot out of like eight they had at the end of the Cal game, they're unbeaten. But
right.
Like you were mentioning during your audio that you posted on the site, I mean, for Utah to win this game, I mean, this is actually could put them on the map.
Well, it would put them on the map. There's no question. And then, and I actually think that it has potential to be we could see a rematch in the Pac-12 championship game of this one. I mean, but it would definitely put them on the map and give them a shot at it. So, look, it's not, just speaking kind of from a selection committee thing, it's not a good thing to have lost to Cal. But if you run the table, we've seen in the first 2 years of the playoff that it really doesn't matter who you lose to, frankly. I mean, Ohio State overcame that loss to a Virginia Tech team that I think ended up 6-6. Oklahoma ended up, overcame that loss to a Texas team that ended up 5-7. It was actually later, a month later in the season, middle of October.
Right.
And so, it's very possible that if Utah could end up being a Pac-12 rep into the college football playoff, but they've got to go do it, and it starts right here. I still think Washington is probably the class of the league. I think they're the most complete team probably in the league. But look, it's hard to go unbeaten.
No, especially going on the road, and that's a very difficult place to play. Well, you travel safe aiming for that big Salt Lake. Find George's work, usatoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Great stuff as always. Enjoy it, George. Always appreciate the time.
All right, thanks. I'm hoping to land right next to the Salt Lake. That'd be much better.
All right. Keep your eye on the pilot. Have a good one, George.
All right, take care.